Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am not the birthday boy. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy, and I am the birthday boy?
No, well, no. I mean, it's your birthday. I mean, it's your birthday.
Right. It's my birthday. I can podcast if I want to.
Or if you don't want to, because the podcast train's got to run, regardless.
Right. That's true. I love to, Justin. I love to share this information.
I know you do.
And entertain people.
I know.
With the medical mishaps of yore. Or now.
Or now.
Or now. Or as the whenever. Case may be. No, this is a very special episode because, one, we are recording on my birthday.
Which is, I mean, it don't get more special than that.
Well, it's the most special day of the year, yeah. I think. We can all agree on that. But also because of who suggested this topic.
Yes. Our friend Vanessa.
Yes. Our dear friend Vanessa. Sent an email via Lynn to Justin about some supposed concerns about cereal.
Yes.
She had received the email. She didn't have the concerns.
No. She received an email about concerns about cereal.
Concerns about different additives that can be in cereal. This was forwarded to Justin, forwarded to me, like, hey, what do you think, Sydney? And I said, you know what? We have never talked about mainly food dyes, preservatives too, but the idea that artificial food dyes have some effect on behavior. And yes. That seems like a big miss for us. Like, why haven't we talked about it yet? That's a big plot hole.
Yeah. I don't think we don't have a cogent narrative to the Sawbones podcast, but
I like to think of it as a narrative. It's the story of bad medicine.
Yeah, for
not
sure.
Not bad medicine like the song.
No. That would have been a killer intro. if I thought about it and had the money to license, is that Rat?
I don't know.
The song Bad Medicine.
I just know
Rat.
That's
is it Poison?
I'm not sure.
Okay, it's Bon Jovi. That's me. I'm sorry.
Love Bon Jovi.
Could have gotten John on the phone, no problem. But I
really? Wait, can you get John Bon Jovi on the phone? Because if you can, why are we recording a podcast?
I can get John Jovi on the phone. that is a good friend of his. What is the deal with food dyes? Because you and I have bandied about. I'm going to say this without knowing how all this will shake out. Mm-hmm. We have long bandied about the thought that
red food dye
makes our daughter Charlie
hyper,
incorrigible.
Yes, like yes. more active,
yes.
Harder to get to bed.
Yes,
yes. We have done that, and you've probably heard that for a long time. That there are certain food dyes that if you feed a child, they will become basically poorly behaved, right?
Yes.
Like you can't control their behavior at that point. They won't go to bed. They might like be physically more active. And like to the extent that like my mom believed this, I remember my mom wouldn't let me eat red things. She was firmly convinced that things with artificial,
apples,
not red things,
cherries,
but artificial red food dye, red number 40, right? Like that's the one that gets the most. Mm. I think now that's the one that's associated with the most play, but like, the general idea that artificial food dyes are doing something to all of our brains, but mainly child brains, to make our behavior different. We even fell into this. We briefly avoided red things.
Yes.
Based on this idea that when Charlie would eat something red, it was harder for us to get her down at night, right? Like
yes.
A red popsicle or something that had red food dye in it, which could be something purple too, by the way.
Yes.
Or blue. Or like lots of things.
Yeah.
You know, they're not all red. It food dyes like the color wheel. Think about it. Anyway. Now, I will admit to you that deep in my heart, I knew this couldn't be right. Because why was I never taught anything about this? Why would no one have ever mentioned it? Even like as a side note, by the way, the like in medical school, these artificial dyes do some on my pediatrics rotation. Why had no one ever said anything like this to me? Why did I know of no evidence? Why would this be true and it be a secret?
That's a great question.
That's not really how things work, especially when it comes to behavior and kids, because it's one of the number one things that parents come and will ask you about. I know as a family doctor, about their kids' behavior. And so if I had something easy, like I know that these artificial food dyes are the problem, oof, man, that would be a huge relief, right? Here's a concrete thing you can do. So it's alluring. It's alluring to think that.
Yeah.
Like if I just cut these out, my kid will go to bed at night.
You are desperate as a parent to any like quick fix, any easy thing that you could do, I think is extremely appealing.
We've talked about this, Justin and I, privately a lot before. There are so many times as a parent where you have this moment where you think it can't be this hard.
Yes, this can't. This can't be right.
This hard.
It can't be right. This cannot be how it goes.
Now, where did this idea come from? Well, the first concern over an artificial food dye was actually expressed a very long time ago, 1940s, and it was over a yellow dye called tartrazine. Now, are you familiar with tartrazine?
Not at all.
Okay. Tartrazine is the dye that is in Mountain Dew.
Okay. Is that yellow number 5?
I'm not sure what number it is. It's yellow. It is a yellow food dye. Do you remember the concern about tartrazine in the 1990s when it comes to Mountain Dew? Do you remember anything about a food dye?
Is it that it would reduce your sperm count?
Okay, not exactly, but close. Yes, the idea that it somehow would shrink testicles or make someone's penis smaller.
Yeah.
In some way affect.
I mean, if we're talking about legend.
Genitalia, fertility, sperm count. If we're talking about
playground legend,
size.
All of these could have been true, right? Like, all of these different ideas.
Well, this was in the 1990s. There was a very intense but brief moment where everyone got really scared about Mountain Dew. Not that scared, because I can tell you from here in West Virginia, everybody was still drinking Mountain Dew.
It.
Yeah. To this day, Justin, you'll fall for Mountain Dew every time.
So, okay, don't make me sound like some sort of bad person.
No, sometimes I'm just saying, like, people love Mountain Dew. People love Mountain Dew. I love Dr. Pepper. That's my thing.
First time I ever got drunk was on Mountain Dew Code Red and Vodka.
I have no comment.
That was not a good night. That went bad for me.
What was interesting is that tartrazine did seem to elicit an allergic reaction more commonly than other dyes. And by more commonly, I still mean it's incredibly uncommon. But just on the scale of what is more likely to be an allergen, tartrazine was slightly more likely than the other food dyes. It was noted, again, as far back as the 1940s, that it could trigger hives in patients, especially if you are allergic to aspirin. Mm-hmm. Or that class of medicine, salicylic acid is aspirin, that kind of family. If you're allergic to that, there was a slightly higher chance that you would be allergic to tartrazine as well. Cross-reactivity. And it was even suggested that it worsened asthma symptoms if you ate or drank something with tartrazine in it, although this was never supported by a lot of evidence. There was concern over this. But this early research was important because it would go on to inspire a Dr. Benjamin Feingold. And I really think, there are a lot of people who talked about the ideas of food dyes and allergies and food dyes and behavior and stuff. But a lot of what we think about today and a lot of sort of our, I would say, misconceptions stem from Dr. Feingold's work.
Okay.
So originally from Pittsburgh, Dr. Feingold studied in Germany, Austria. He studied Northwestern for a while. He finally landed in Los Angeles in 1932, where he worked at several different hospitals. He was interested in some ongoing research at the time on allergies, especially food allergies. That was kind of, even though he had done some work in like pathology and general pediatrics, allergies was where he kind of you know, landed. Mm-hmm. And he started working in that field in 1945. By 1952, he was chief of the Department of Allergies for Kaiser Foundation Hospital and Permanente Medical Group. And he established all of the departments of allergy for Northern California.
Wow.
So this was really his domain, right? Dr. Feingold was...
allergy expert.
Yes, the allergy guy. And this is what he would do for his entire career. This research and his work in allergies, especially in pediatric allergies, would become his legacy. This was his whole life and his legacy. He was initially concerned about the abilities of these food dyes, like tartrazine, to trigger an allergic response, which is different than what we're talking about, right? We're not, the idea that something can be an allergen is in no way controversial.
Right.
Anything could be an allergen, right? Like, that's the thought, like, well, not anything, but...
But if
a lot of things can be allergic.
Okay, for the purposes of nomenclature, though, if we're saying that our kid has this adverse reaction to red food dye, aren't we talking about an allergic reaction?
Well, for the purposes of an allergic reaction, what we're really...
Does it involve histamine?
It involves... Like, well, not... I mean, yes, but no. An allergic reaction is your body treating a substance that isn't dangerous or an invader or harmful in any way as if it is. So it's an inappropriate reaction.
So it can't just be any adverse reaction.
No.
It's an immune reaction.
That's actually a really important distinction because there are times where people will have some sort of reaction to a medication. It made them nauseous. And that's not an allergic reaction. But if they list that as an allergy, it may prevent us from using a medicine that's really important for that patient. So it is actually really important. It's something we don't do often enough to distinguish between... Okay, you had an adverse reaction to this medication, but it wasn't an allergy, and something that's a true allergy, which means I just can't give this to you because your body thinks it's harmful and it's not, but your body got confused and here we are.
Makes sense.
Okay. So he thought that the allergic reactions triggered by food dyes initially, he thought, well, they can manifest in a variety of ways that are pretty typical for allergies. So like hives or eczema or asthma. These are all closely related to allergic reactions. These are all things that we understand are sort of a family of reactions in the body, the skin, the immune system, that kind of thing.
Okay.
The easiest way to see if these additives were causing problems, so if you have a child who comes in and they have eczema and you think it's tartrazine, for instance, you tell the parents to avoid it, mm-hmm. right? Like that's the easiest way to address that problem.
No more Mountain Dew for your three-year-old.
Just look on the package. If it has this in it, don't let the kid eat it. So easy. That's, just eliminate them. He also had some other concerns. So as we mentioned, there was some evidence that tartrazine and salicylates had some cross-reactivity. So he began to throw that in there too. Like also, you know, if your kid's allergic to food dyes, they may also be allergic to aspirin and other medications in that family, salicylates. So avoid that too. Okay. Not a huge deal.
Salicylates have salicylic acid. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. In addition, there were a few preservatives that he began to be concerned about, okay? So there are a few different things in food, and I'll go into these, but the three that Dr. Feingold had concerns about are BHA, which is butyrated hydroxyanisole, BHT, butylated hydroxytoluene, and TBHQ, tertiary butyl hydroquinone.
Okay.
Hydroquinone. Got that?
Got
you
it.
Don't need it. We're just going to call them BHA, BHT, and TBHQ. They're preservatives. What do they do? Well, BHA and BHT are both stabilizers and antioxidants. They've been used in food for a very long time. They have been studied extensively, like all preservatives, for toxicity and health impacts. BHA, there was one study where it was found to cause, in very high doses, some tumors in hamsters, but it was never found to be a carcinogen in humans or rats, which I guess hamsters are very not like humans.
I mean, I hunt, yeah. a
study in rats.
Can we drill down on that for a second? Is it the size, the cognitive abilities, the
It has hair? Something to do with the GI tract.
No, it has to do with a lot like of things, hon. It's a hamster. They're very the different from humans.
That it has to do with the way they break down substances. Hamsters are way more different than humans than rats are in that. I mean, you would think, like, if it caused tumors in hamsters, it's bad, right? No, if it caused tumors in rats, we're more concerned. If it doesn't cause tumors in rats, we're less concerned.
Okay.
For humans.
Okay.
This is science. Anyway, BHA, in the amounts that we eat, there's no evidence that there's dangerous. Similarly, with BHT, it's never been shown to do anything bad. TBHQ is a phenyl preservative. It's mainly used in things like vegetable oil or animal fats, and it's never been shown to harm us. All of these things are similar. You've all heard that sort of idea of aspartame. We talked about this.
Like,
if you fed rats nothing but massive amounts of aspartame for days and days and days, weeks and weeks, months and months on end, you could maybe harm them, but in the amounts any human is actually ingesting, they're not harmful.
Right.
Like, it was similar with these substances. We can't find a way they're hurting people, is the idea. So they are commonly used as food preservatives, is my point.
I mean, the problem with it is that it's gross. Like, the pink packet especially? Oh, God.
Yes. Sweet and low.
I mean, I was trying to, in case they ever want to come on as a sponsor, I was trying to not, like, directly attack them, but yes.
Honey, I don't understand Sweet and Low, but my mom loves it.
There's a generation that's wild about it.
There's a generation that loves Sweet and Low. Same generation that made Diet Right a thing.
I mean, Equal's not great either, but, whoo, Sweet and Low. Oh, God. If I go to, like, the Sonic or something, and I'm getting a sweet tea, and I'm like, and I need some yellow, and they're like, I get to the window and they're like, we only got pink. I'm like, keep your tea. I can't have anything to do with this. Please keep your tea. That's just about me.
Well, I understand. Yeah. I can't eat the pink. Ugh. That's why I grew stevia in the backyard.
Yes.
Those sweet leaves.
The sweet, sweet leaves.
So he advised eliminating all that stuff. He also went ahead and said, you know, as long as we're at it, artificial flavors like artificial vanilla or strawberry, artificial sweeteners, again, what we've just been discussing, aspartame or sucralose or whatever. Stevia was actually okay. But all these other artificial sweeteners, bad. So with all this concern and some information, he started prescribing an elimination diet for patients that presented with allergies or asthma or any of these skin conditions, okay? So you'd bring your kid in and say, my kid has eczema, and he would say, here's what I want you to do. Don't have any food dyes. Don't have any food preservatives. Don't have any artificial flavors. Don't have any artificial sweeteners, and avoid all salicylates.
Mm.
This was a tall order. Especially at the time. I mean, we're talking about, like, by the time we're getting into this, it's the 1970s.
Oh, so yeah, we're very deep into messing with food in lots of interesting ways.
A lot of prepackaged, you know, food. Like, a lot of food, processed foods. The idea of just eating natural foods is becoming harder and harder.
Yeah.
And this rebounds, right? Like, I feel like we're coming back around.
Yeah, I think it's more
easier. But, like, it was very much out of fashion. So, anyway, he prescribes these really difficult diets and says, this will clear up your kids' skin allergies, whatever. He felt like it was beneficial. He felt like half of these kids were improving. But then he noticed another positive effect. I'm going to tell you what that was right after we go to the billing department.
I'm on the edge of my seat over here. Let's go.
The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
Hi, I'm Biz, host of One Bad Mother. Whether you're a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
I signed my stepson up for a camp that is actually in another state. I feel really stupid, and I don't think we're going to get the money back.
And then he found out that the car manual is a book about cars, so now he's reading our car manual.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job. Download One Bad Mother on MaximumFun.org, and yes, there will be swears.
Hey there, beautiful people. I'm Travelle Anderson.
And I'm Jared Hill. We are the hosts of Fanti, the show where we have complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the things that we really, really love sometimes, but also have some problematic feelings about.
Yes, we get into it all. You want to know our thoughts about Nicki Minaj and all her foolishness? We got you. You want to know our thoughts about gentrification and perhaps some positive? aspects of gentrification. We get into that too. Every single Thursday, you can check us out at MaximumFun.org. Listen, you know you want it, honey, so come on and get it. Period.
Okay, so this doctor told parents they can't let their kids have anything fun.
Yes.
And you notice another effect.
So after cutting out all of these different substances, he also began to get these anecdotal reports from parents that the kids' behavior had improved. That the kids were like following rules better, were easier to, you know, instruct in school, were easier to get to bed at night. Just generally, like, our kids have been behaving better since we took everything fun out of their diet, since we took all the colors and flavors out of their diet. That's a bad thing to say. You know I love fruits and vegetables. I'm all about eating fruits and vegetables all the time. So I'm not saying all the color and fun, but for a kid.
Yeah, fruit by the foot, you're losing all of it.
I mean, it was, and I'm not saying that these foods, and we'll get into that. Like, do they naturally have some sort of benefit above other things? No.
Did you see Trix when they had natural colors? It was so sad.
It was
so sad.
Muted. Muted.
Yeah, it was really, really depressing.
So he began to theorize that there is something in all these substances that he had parents eliminate. Something in there is affecting behavior.
There's so many confounders, though. Like, they're in this you described what a wide swath of foods and drinks it is, right? Like, it seemed like there could be a lot of different factors.
We're going to get into it's bigger than you think.
Ooh.
So, with this discovery, the Feingold diet became incredibly fashionable. Now, when I was researching this show, I found mention of the Feingold diet. And I feel like there's going to be a generation of people, especially, like, I feel like if we mention this to our parents, they would immediately know what we're talking about. Because this was an incredibly popular idea. Like, when it captured the imagination of parents, they latched on to it very strongly. Because the idea that it was that it was useful for all manner of behavioral issues. You know, you didn't have to have a child who was actually diagnosed with ADHD. At the time, we honestly wouldn't have called it ADHD.
Right.
We would have just said something sort of general, like your child is hyperactive, right? So it was good for anything like that. It was prescribed for dyslexia, for autism, all manner of behavioral issues. Whatever your kid was doing that was bothering you, the Feingold diet may be helpful. And, you know, the idea is, like, if you're cutting out things that your kid doesn't need anyway, I mean, when you focus on, like, the artificial dyes and flavors, well, it kind of fits in with this idea. Like, is that what we should be doing anyway? It plays on parental guilt. Am I a bad parent for giving my kid this stuff anyway?
Because, like, let's be honest. The thing that's unsaid is, like, a lot of it's playing into sugar. Right.
Yes.
I mean, it's like a lot, or more specifically, like refined sugars, like that you would.
To an extent, yeah. You know. Well, and also this general idea. I think, like, as a parent, I can tell you, I feel guilty when I am feeding my child something that I didn't prepare or you didn't prepare, like that wasn't cooked. I know it's not bad.
Into the lunchbox.
I feel guilty about that. And I know that, like, a healthy diet can look a lot of different ways. I know that logically, but there's a lot of guilt on parents to not use prepackaged processed foods, but to only use, you know, whole fruits and vegetables and things. And that's, like, I mean, fit that into modern parenting and our busy lifestyles and budgets. But the budget is the other part of this. Yeah. If you can afford that, that's a luxury. But it played on all those ideas. And so basically you cut out all the things we mentioned. So this already eliminates pretty much everything processed, prepackaged, especially back in the 70s. Imagine trying to shop this way before this sort of, like, Whole Foods revolution that would eventually happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, add all the things that contain salicylates. Because the thing is, I said salicylic acid, like aspirin, and there's some other meds. But there are foods that naturally contain salicylates. I mean things that grow out of the earth and have salicylic acid in them. So this is where the diet got really difficult. Let me give you a sampling of foods you couldn't eat strictly on the Feingold diet.
Okay.
Apples.
Wow.
Apricots. Mm-hmm. Berries, cherries, currants, grapes, nectarines, oranges, peaches, plums, prunes, raisins, tangerines, tomatoes, alfalfa sprouts, broccoli, chicory, cucumbers, eggplant, endives, okra, peppers, pickles, radishes, squash, sweet potatoes, spinach, watercress, zucchini, almonds, chestnuts, other nuts and seeds. No cereals, unless free of preservatives and coloring, which would probably have been tough at the time.
Yeah.
You know? No processed crackers, no allspice, anise seeds, cayenne, cinnamon, cloves, curry, cumin, dill, ginger, mustard, oregano, pimento, rosemary, tarragon, thyme, turmeric, coffee, tea, diet soda, fruit juice, jams, jellies, mint flavoring, chewing gum, and any foods with coloring and flavoring.
That is miserable.
Yes.
I mean, I can't imagine.
Imagine trying to feed a kid. You've eliminated the kids' cuisines. I don't even know if they had kids' cuisine in 1970. I know that in the 90s, I very much wanted a kids' cuisine.
Yeah.
Or a Hot Pocket. You're eliminating the Totino's, of course, but you're also eliminating all of this.
Like apples.
Apples.
Do the fruits that have naturally occurring salicylic acid have a pain relief component, or is that not?
What was eventually found, and like this diet has been edited a lot since then, many of these foods contain it in such incredibly small amounts that they could not possibly be bioactive.
Okay.
So, no, they wouldn't have a pain relief effect, but they also couldn't affect you adversely either. So, eventually, the diet would be modified to remove some of these things. But this is the original sort of idea. These are salicylate-containing foods and then everything else. Initially, there would also be a conversation between Dr. Feingold and the patient and parents about the idea of gluten or milk protein needing to be eliminated. Now, he at least would say, I actually want you to have testing for allergies to these things before I eliminate them. Because you imagine if you also, in addition to all that, eliminate dairy and gluten.
I mean, what is there left?
I think meat.
Celery.
Yeah, meat and celery.
Delicious. Yeah.
Especially for a kid.
Some water and bouillon. You got a stew going.
And then again, you put all the other factors of like it's a kid and like they go to school and like people are working and you got to do this on a budget. And so all these other things. But he did say like visit, like let's do an allergy test before we actually do that. Like you might not need to eliminate that. What can you eat? Here, I do have a list of some things that are acceptable. Like bananas are still on there. Watermelon, grapefruit, honeydew, kiwi, pears, pineapple. So there's still some fruits. You can still eat all manner of beans and lentils. Potatoes, except sweet potatoes, are still there. Corn, like you said. Celery, my favorite. Cauliflower is still on there. There is still some food. But, I mean, it's a hard diet to stick to.
That sounds very restrictive.
And you can have stevia. So there's that. In the first phase of the diet, you eliminate all this. Everything.
Wow.
Okay? And the idea is that your symptoms will go away. So whether it's allergy or behavioral, it goes away.
Okay.
Because you've eliminated the trigger. In the second phase, you can pick one of those salicylate-containing foods one at a time and try to add it back. Hmm. So like the behaviors are better, I'll let you eat apples for a week and see how things go.
Okay.
If the behaviors do not return, you can keep eating that salicylate. If the behaviors return, you eliminate it again, start over, try something else.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Sounds a little subjective, but yes.
Now, artificial colors, sweeteners, flavors, preservatives, that's gone forever. That stuff is gone your entire life. You never eat those things. So Feingold started telling parents to try it. He presented and published his findings throughout the 70s. He felt it was very effective. Like I said, like over 50% of children responded positively to his diet. He said that if you're going to get good results from it, some things that are essential, one, you have to adhere to the diet perfectly. If you fudge it once, it won't work. Two, the entire family must participate.
Why? I don't want to do it just because my kids mean.
It's buy-in. The idea is that you can't have those foods in the house. So the whole family.
But I want them, Sydney. Why are you doing this to me?
This is the way he said to do it. The whole family has to be in on it for it to be successful. Well, I'm not, but a lot of parents did.
Sorry, I just got so worked up.
And then
I just
again,
bought a huge package of fruit by the foot. So it was like, what am I going to do with these?
And again, it's for life.
Not for long.
All these things for life. And you will find that a lot of parents did claim to notice like subjective anecdotal differences. Like these are not things that were necessarily measured, but there were a lot of parents who provided testimonials that this was working.
Yeah.
That they noticed a difference for their kids.
I mean, you have to tell yourself that if you're doing something so incredibly painful and difficult, right?
However, this was evaluated by other scientists. I mean, this is a radical thing. If it worked, that's one thing. But if it doesn't work, you know, that's a lot to put parents through. So if you're, especially if you're a doctor, if I'm, I can tell you, if I'm going to tell a parent to put their family through this, I better know
for sure
that it, yeah, that it can work. So a 2 week long conference was arranged in January of 1975 in Glen Cove, Long Island, and the Nutrition Foundation attendees created what they called the National Advisory Committee, and at it, they published a report saying that there are no controlled studies that have demonstrated that hyperkinesis, so hyperactivity, what we would probably what we would call now is ADHD. Term. Yeah. Well, hyperkinesis, can, it's not a diagnosis. Well, it's like a symptom.
Got it.
Is related to the ingestion of food additives. So they had no reason to think like, look, I know what you're seeing, but we don't have any evidence that, that this is correlation. It's not causation. In subsequent studies, because this has been studied multiple times, even when a difference is noted in behavior when food additives are eliminated, even when there is like a measurable difference in behavior, it's typically only the parents who notice it. They can't validate these same behavioral changes from like outside observers teachers.
Though, who's gonna, they're also the best judge though. That's really tricky.
But it's hard because teachers would not know a difference, but the parents swore there was a difference. The results were often inconsistent, inconclusive. Some kids' behavior seemed to worsen. Other, I mean, probably because they were just mad. They couldn't have their fruit by the foot. Other kids did seem to get better. The studies that showed more of a difference were ones that weren't properly blinded. So all of the adult observers knew that the diet. Well, because if you really, if you are really concerned about your child's behavior and you know that they're on this new diet and you really want it to work, you're going to be more likely to think that it works.
Of course, yeah.
And that is, that's no shame on these parents. You know, it's just the reality.
Yes.
And at the time, again, we a lot of these kids were probably not being properly diagnosed with anything if they did have it. Like, if they did have ADHD, there probably wasn't a doctor diagnosing them with that or trying to treat them for that. So parents probably felt pretty desperate, you know. The ones that were properly blinded were pretty inconsistent. There was one example. If you ever hear this as, like, somebody trying to argue this is real, they're probably going to cite this study. It's a 2007 British study, which was called the Southampton study. And in it, 3 to 8 year olds were given two kinds of drinks that contained a mix of dyes. Afterwards, parents reported increased hyperactivity in the kids that got the dyes. But teachers and, again, anybody else couldn't tell a difference. And because the dyes were mixed together, it was really hard to tell what was the problem. But there was a difference shown in the study. And there was also some sort of age-related difference. So part of the argument from proponents of this idea is that it's just that we're testing the wrong ages for this. Like, you're only sensitive to it at a certain age. And so we're missing that age.
Okay.
Like, we need to test younger kids.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A meta-analysis of all these studies that was published in 2004 was pretty inconclusive. It basically said, in kids who have already been diagnosed with ADHD, they may be more sensitive to food dyes.
Okay.
We don't know. More study is indicated, but that was the best that they could say. Kind of, so in kids who have already been diagnosed, maybe they're a little more sensitive to these substances for some reason. So where does that leave us now?
I don't know.
Obviously, all of these things are still in our food in the U.S. and many other countries. There are some countries where specific things have been removed or like warnings put on packages and things like that, mainly out of concern, but not so much out of, like I said, an overabundance of evidence that there's any harm.
Yeah.
They're widely accepted as safe. They're unlikely to change behavior. But there are still many parents who will say, oh, my kid wouldn't go to bed tonight because I gave him a red Ring Pop, you know?
Yeah.
We were two of those parents for a while. Yeah,
don't give Charlie red stuff. It makes her wild.
And the other thing that's hard about it is that when you're just talking about food dyes, which I think is the part that has like sustained the longest, right? Like, I never heard eliminate apples because they have salicylates, but I did hear to eliminate food dyes.
For sure, yeah.
And I think the reason that that continues to get so much play is it's not like our kids need food dyes. We don't need food. Nobody needs artificial colors in their food. So it seems like low-hanging fruit, right? Like, well, why don't we just remove them? We don't need them.
It also, I think, appeals to the naturalistic fallacy where I think in everybody's mind, or at least most thinking people, there's like every once in a while you get this pang of like, I should just be eating carrots. Like, I should just be eating carrots that I grew myself and strawberries and hunt squirrels or something. I don't know. Like, a pure, there's so much in the food that there's a part of you that feels like this can't be right. There's, you know what I mean? Like, whenever you see the commercials for, like, look at this ingredient list, it's like, that doesn't really, I mean, who knows what that
Well, and I mean, to some extent, like, that fear is not completely unfounded because, as we've talked about on the show before, there was a long time where we put, I mean, lots of whack stuff in food, right? Like, your food wasn't safe. The stuff that they were putting in your food wasn't, you couldn't be sure that it was okay for your body. In fact, sometimes it very much wasn't.
Yeah.
That was prior to the FDA and, you know, all of the regulation that has come into play since then. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still this concern, like, we know that if there's enough money in something, it gets hard to stop it, even if it's proven dangerous.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it's always fair to question and then look to the science to see what the answer is. Right now, we don't have science that says these things are linked to behavior, really, at least nothing solid. I think the most important thing is if you have concerns about your kids' behavior, if you're worried that they're not able to pay attention in school, that they're not able to, like, stay in their seat, whatever, you should take them to their doctor, discuss these concerns, and make sure they're properly diagnosed.
Yeah.
Because the big problem with a lot of this is probably these kids really did need help and maybe medication for some underlying condition that wasn't being diagnosed.
But then you find the artificial dyes, and it's like, well, that's the silver bullet. That's the thing that I need to fix this.
And I don't
look for the deeper stuff.
Exactly. Because I think there's a reluctance. Like, wouldn't it be easier if we could just take something out of the diet than take medicine?
Yeah.
Well, that might be nice, but sometimes we need medicine. And thank goodness we have medicines that are effective and safe in those cases. So I would say if you want to eliminate, especially food dyes from your kid's diet, you're not going to harm them. If you can afford that and you have the willingness and the time to do that, you're not going to harm them.
But it may very well be pointless.
It may very well be pointless. And if you're, and again, if you are concerned about your child's behavior, please take them and get them properly diagnosed. Do not avoid appropriate medical care in pursuit of something like this.
Yes.
I think that's the biggest risk.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We hope you have enjoyed yourself because we've certainly had a good time being here with you. Our theme song is performed by the Taxpayers. We use it as our intro and outro, and we very much appreciate them letting us do that. If you head to McElroyMerch.com, we got a new web store. There's a Sydney's classic bumper sticker, I'm not afraid of my clown husband. No, sorry, not ashamed of my clown husband. She is also
not afraid of you
in any way, shape, or form. It's created by Jacob Bailey, and it's a bumper sticker, and it's very funny. And proceeds from that go to the Huntington Children's Museum, so that's cool. And that, I would say, Sid is going to do it for us. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.